Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hello again, everybody. And if you thought the situation in Egypt couldn't get any more complicated, consider some of today's developments. Former President Hosni Mubarak has been ordered freed from prison by an Egyptian court, just as the spiritual leader of the Muslim Brotherhood has been arrested. And as the U.S. thinks about cutting off aid, Saudi Arabia is pledging to make up any money that Washington withholds. So let's talk about the implications for people there and people here with Time Magazine world editor Bobby Ghosh. He wrote a piece over the weekend called Egypt No Longer Matters. It's time for Washington to recognize that Cairo is not the center of the Arab world. Hi, Bobby. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian.
First on today's developments, the release of Hosni Mubarak imminent, apparently, after this court order, and the arrest of the Muslim Brotherhood spiritual leader, Mohammed Badi. Are these moves related or a coincidence?
I don't think they're directly related. Mohammed Badi's arrest is not surprising. I think the generals behind the coup have been planning this, that part of it, for a while. The Mubarak release is much more surprising if it happens. We should be cautious. It's not yet 100% certain. They're dropping one set of charges. There's a chance that they may hold him on another set of charges. But that comes more out of the left field because nobody was expecting that. I don't think that the two were planned together, but the timing is certainly unfortunate and is going to do nothing whatsoever to calm down the streets in Egypt. On the contrary, I think it's going to spark a fresh spasm of violence.
What's the significance of Mohammed Badi to the Muslim Brotherhood movement in Egypt? This is not a name that's widely known in the United States.
He's their sort of senior-most figure. He's a quasi-religious figure, and political leadership that reports to him. There's always been a certain amount of mystery as to how much he influences the activities of the political leadership. How much, for instance, did he influence Mohamed Morsi when he was president? The Brotherhood operates more, as the name suggests, more in a roundtable fashion than in a absolutely clear one person at the top hierarchical fashion.
Well, is he suspected of any criminal activity, or is this just a flat out political prisoner now?
Well, it sounds very much like trumped-up charges. These are the kinds of charges that military juntas do everywhere in the world, which is, they're accusing of inciting violence. Not committing violence themselves, inciting violence, which, of course, when you say someone's inciting violence, it allows you to interpret their language in any way you like. In a highly charged atmosphere, what is incitement? Is when General Sisi tells people to go out on the street to give him, quote, a mandate, unquote, isn't that inciting violence? So the nature of the charges makes them very suspect, frankly, but it's very clear the objective is political. The objective is to try to cut off the head of the Muslim Brotherhood. And Badi is not the only person arrested. Mohamed Morsi still remains behind bars, unseen to the world since his arrest, and a number of other senior Brotherhood figures as well.
Listeners, your questions for Bobby Ghosh, world editor for Time, who's been following events in Egypt closely, or your comments, 212-433-WNYC, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. Bobby, I've been asking all my Egypt guests, why has the military taken this violent and authoritarian turn? They were supposed to be taking Egypt back from the Morsi government to restore democracy and to protect.
No, they were not.
And to protect. Well, that was the thought of the liberal, you know, the secularists who were in the streets, and of course,
yes,
to protect their own considerable economic privileges. But with this massacre and everything else they're doing, they risk being the next failed state, which might not even be in their interest.
That is probably true. I think it is only the liberals in their sort of there was a certain amount of self delusion there that the generals were trying to restore democracy. Only the liberals and John Kerry thought that. whereas it was plain as day to anybody else paying attention that the generals were simply taking back power. Now the Muslim Brotherhood and President Morsi certainly made things easier for them to do so. Gave them served up the excuse on a silver platter. But the military's agenda right from the get-go was to restore what they see as the natural order of things, which is they run the country. And everybody else who disagrees with them gets tossed in jail or worse, gets a bullet in the head. That has always, now to their credit, the military has never been particularly subtle about this. They've always behaved in this manner, and they remain unreconstituted. So it's basically the rest of us looking at the military in, to use the old analogy of the blind men trying to understand what it was that they were feeling up, and the whole story of the blind men and the elephant. This is what's been going on. The liberals have been sort of pretending that the generals are somehow a force for good. The United States foreign policy establishment have been pretending that the generals are somehow arbiters of democracy. And the Brotherhood, of course, see the generals as ogres and monsters. The truth is the generals are what they've always been. They're looking out for themselves.
But does that mean they want to reinstitute a Mubarak kind of government?
I think that ship has already sailed. I think they're not... whatever else you can say of them, they're not stupid. So I don't think they would actually bring Mubarak back. But they already have a Mubarak-type government in place. They have essentially a military-run government with some men in suits to give it a gloss of civilian rule. And General Sisi, I would not be surprised if he ran for elections next year. I would not be surprised if he won, because, of course, the elections are not going to be free and fair. He has a lot of popularity right now. If he fought a free and fair election today, he would probably win without having to resort to ballot box stuffing. But that would simply then cement the military's control over the country, and it would be back. He would take his uniform off, just as Mubarak did before him, and get into a business suit and then go on with business as usual.
Bobby Ghosh, world editor for Time.com, 212-433-WNYC. And here's a caller, an Egyptian-American, Naged in Lower Manhattan. Thank you so much for calling in. You're on the air.
Hello? Hi.
Is it?
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Am I saying your name right? Are you Naged?
It's Naged Iskander.
Thanks for calling. What do you want to say?
I want to ask your guest, on what basis is he saying that Mesopotamia is not a terrorist? As of yesterday, 73 Coptic churches have been burned by his organization in the last week. As of yesterday, over 50 police officers have been killed by snipers of the Muslim Brotherhood. On what basis is not calling him a terrorist? The Brotherhood has always operated a secret branch and a legal branch. So what would the NYPD do if they lost 50 of their own to snipers? What would the NYPD do if they had 80 or 73 churches burnt?
Bobby.
When you say the Muslim Brotherhood has a secret branch, that automatically means there's no proof of it, there's no evidence of it. The Muslim Brotherhood may very well be responsible for some of their followers may very well be responsible for some of these churches being burned, and they should be brought before the law. But there is no proof yet. That nobody has furnished any proof against Mohammed Badeh. And let's not forget there are many other actors at large in Egypt who have an interest in burning churches. They are the Salafists, who are far the right of the Muslim Brotherhood. They are terrorist groups that operate out of the Sinai and have a presence in other parts of the country. To pick the Brotherhood out, whereas the sort of senior Salafi leadership, because they blessed the coup, get to go scot-free, seems at the very least unfair.
So let me ask you about the Salafis. When the military first seized power from Morsi, it was reported that the pro-coup coalition included the unlikely combination of liberal secularists and the Salafis, an Islamist faction that was more radically conservative than the Muslim Brotherhood. As far as you can tell, what's the state of that coalition today?
Well, the coalition has sort of clearly unraveled. The liberal lion, Mohammed al-Baradei, has bolted from the government. In fact, has bolted from the country. I gather he's in Austria at the moment. His departure takes away, a great deal of gloss from the government and the pretense that this is somehow a force toward democracy.
And the Salafists?
The Salafists have gone awfully silent of late. I think they're struggling. They're caught in a really bad place. They're struggling with having to justify Brotherhood activists being essentially slaughtered in the street, on the one hand, and on the other hand, having to explain why they continue, why they supported the coup in the first place. They've gone very, very silent, and that's something worth noting, I think.
John in Parsippany, you're on WNYC with Bobby Ghosh. Hi.
Hello, Brian. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to ask Mr. Ghosh, unfortunately did not get a chance to read his article, why he thinks Cairo no longer is the center of the Arab world and where he thinks that center has moved to.
Yes, and let me remind people of the title of the article that Bobby published this weekend. It was Egypt No Longer Matters, and the subtitle, It's Time for Washington to Recognize that Cairo is Not the Center of the Arab World. Bobby?
Well, the Arab world is a more complicated place than it used to be in the 1950s and 60s when America began to formulate foreign policy. Back then, you could argue that Cairo was the center of the Arab world. It was the place where the dominant post-colonial political idea was born, which is Nasserism. It was the source of much of the Arab world's culture, cinema, television, art, music, books. Most of it came out of Egypt. The Arab world no longer has a center in that way. It's a much more sophisticated, complicated place. It's a bit like saying, what is the heart of Europe? There is no one city or one country even that represents all of Europe. And similarly, there isn't such a place in the Middle East. If an Arab today is watching television, let's say, they're much more likely to be watching Turkish soap operas and Lebanese pop musicals, pop videos, rather than Egyptian cinema. If they're watching news on television, they're much more likely to be watching news channels that come from Qatar, which is to say Al Jazeera, than they are to be watching, let's say, Nile TV, which comes out of Egypt. So there are many more sources of influence and power in the Arab world than there used to be, and Egypt's place in that hierarchy has fallen quite dramatically. Egypt is now, from the point of view of the Arab world, a poor country. Its last big opportunity to be central to the Arab world was when it was the place where it was once again the laboratory of a great political idea, which is post-dictatorial democracy. And as long as that idea was being tested in Egypt, Egypt was the sort of focus of everyone's attention in the Arab world. Well, the test has failed. And what's left is an old-style military rule state that is profoundly poor, very badly managed, very, very corrupt, has very few natural resources, and is potentially a source of instability and terror. In other words, Egypt is Yemen.
And in terms of whose influence is rising in the Middle East, let me play a clip of Senator Bob Corker of Tennessee on ABC this week on Sunday, referring to who's influencing Egypt with the U.S. influence waning.
There's no question that we overestimated what our leverage was, and we've underestimated the leverage that Saudi Arabia and UAE has had on this government.
Do you agree? Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, are they backing the generals, and are they, especially Saudi Arabia, becoming increasingly influential as a regional power?
They certainly are. It's easier to say they're backing the generals but the more complex reality is that they're backing anybody against the Brotherhood. Their main fear is the Brotherhood. And so anybody who's cracking down on the Brotherhood, which at the moment is the generals, will get money from Saudi Arabia. But let's be clear. that money does not come without strings attached. That a lot of that money is not going to go to feed Egyptians and to create jobs. A lot of that money, we know what happens with Saudi money around the world. We know where that money is spent. It is spent on building mosques, and it is spent on appointing Saudi-affiliated religious figures in those mosques, and it is spent on religious schools. And that's the kind of investment the Saudis are most comfortable making, and that's what we're going to see in Egypt, I fear.
Since Saudi Arabia has an Islamist form of government, why wouldn't they be pro-Muslim Brotherhood?
Well, they're further to the right of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Wahhabi Salafi school is much, much farther to the right. The Brotherhood, for all its flaws, is a threat to the Wahhabis because they question the Saudi family's right to rule. They're anti-monarchist. And what do the countries that of the UAE and Saudi Arabia have in common? They're monarchies.
Do you consider this a failure of the Obama administration, or was it beyond the U.S.'s control?
Yes to both. It was a much of what has transpired in the past 2 or 3 months was beyond American control, but it needn't have been this way. 2 years ago, the Obama administration had much greater leverage, had a much greater say and an opportunity to be a significant player. But it sort of missed that opportunity when it hesitated when the Arab Spring happened. The Obama administration continued to support Mubarak until fairly late in the day, and by the time Washington changed its mind, it was really too late.
So now the U.S. is debating whether to cut off aid, including military aid, to the military regime. And a question is arising, obviously, what's in the U.S. national interest? And so here is Senator Corker again on ABC arguing that the U.S. national interest in Egypt is more complicated than the choice of simply generals or Brotherhood. Listen.
We need to be looking at what is in our national interest. And is it in our national interest to have jihadis in northeastern Sinai that maybe threaten the security of Tennesseans and Americans? Is it in our national interest when we have 4.5% of the population and 22% of the world's economic output to ensure that we have priority passage in the Suez Canal and that we continue to have good jobs for Tennesseans and Americans? So I hope this debate will shift. It'll shift to a place where we're pushing, obviously, for the government to act responsibly. Look, I condemn what's happened with the military, but I also condemn what, in essence, was a political coup by the Muslim Brotherhood.
Senator Bob Corker on ABC This Week, and Bobby Ghosh from Time Magazine. There may have been some Tennesseans watching ABC on Sunday who were scratching their heads and asking themselves, what do jihadists in the Sinai have to do with my safety? But what do you think of his framing of the U.S. national interest?
I'm scratching my head a little bit too, Frank, to be honest. I mean, listen, if Egypt becomes like Yemen, a place where terrorists flourish, then it behooves all of us to pay very close attention to it. And the Suez Canal is a very important waterway, but on that, I would say that everybody in Egypt, whether it's the Brotherhood or the Salafists or the military junta or the secularists, everybody understands that messing with the Suez would mean economically bankrupting their country. They need the Suez to be open and for free movement of traffic through the Suez more than anybody else does. The Nasser era is over, has been over for a long time. Much as General Sisi would like it to come back, it's not going to do that.
Before you go, this is a monumental tragedy. Morsi, as an elected president, was supposed to represent a modern democracy with an Islamist majority. That's not how he was governing. And the military coup that toppled him was, for many people, supposed to represent a return to the democratic process, but this time for real, so far just the opposite. You've been very skeptical of the military in this conversation. Do you see a democratic path forward once the current crisis passes?
I don't see what we would recognize as a democracy. I see a return to the Mubarak era where you had sham elections in which handpicked people were allowed to participate. The playing field was was tilted in the favor of one party, which obviously would be the party that was willing to make a deal with the military. And the Brotherhood would be kept out. The Salafis, if they think that they are going to be allowed free participation, are going to have a rude shock coming their way. So yes, there will be the appearance of democracy in the shape of elections, but I don't think it will be a real election.
And there wouldn't be more and more mass movements in the streets, a mass movement overturned Mubarak, then a mass movement overturned Morsi with the obvious help of the generals. Now there's a mass movement again in the streets. This won't just continue?
That could very well happen again. I mean, you missed out one in between. It took a mass movement to persuade the generals after Mubarak to hand power over to the civilian government.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So there were the street removed three different governments. So the Mubarak, the SCAF, which is the military government, and then Morsi after that. Will the street rise against General Sisi? That might very well happen, as we've already seen. The Muslim street, the Egyptian street, is a very fickle place. They've gone from hating the military to loving them. They could turn around and go back to that again. But even that is not democracy. You cannot run a democracy indefinitely from the street.
Bobby Ghosh, world editor for Time Magazine. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, are you a right brain or a left brain person? More to the rational side of your brain or the more intuitive? Hey, it's a trick question because a new study says there may be no such thing as right and left brain people. We'll talk to the lead author of that study.